둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
Got what? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See the Podcast, Season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
He's been shot 6 times. Halloweenies. He's been burned alive. Halloweenies. He's lost his head. Halloweenies. Michael Myers can't and won't be stopped, which is why he returns this October. In anticipation, the Consequence Podcast Network presents Halloweenies, a limited series that carves out one Halloween movie a month, leading all the way up to the October 19th release of David Gordon Green and Danny McBride's new movie. You'll get tricks. You'll get treats. You'll get Michael. Tune in for the night we came home.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound and the Consequence Podcast Network, wherever you're listening from right now, hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with these interviews. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is Aaron Dessner. You know him from The National. Lately, you might know him from Big Red Machine. That's his new collaboration with Justin Vernon. In fact, we're going to talk about that record and its ties to a much bigger project he's involved with called People. It's a collective. It's an online streaming service. It's a really, really cool art project. And he's going to describe every bit of it for you. With a name like Big Red Machine, of course, we're going to talk a little bit about Cincinnati Reds baseball. And we'll also get an update from The National, because next year just happens to be their 20th anniversary. It's Kyle Meredith with Aaron Dessner.
Hey, Kyle. It's Aaron.
I thought I'd start, you know, your publicist, when she set this up and everything, she asked a question right at the end, and she said, and let me know if you have any questions about people. And I thought, well, that's a hell of a question to begin with. Do I have questions about people? This is certainly endlessly, but that's not what she was getting at. In fact, there is a different kind of people, and it's all capitalized, and I thought that'd be a good place to start, because that's sort of where all of this starts, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been, there's this, you know, this artist collective that we've been sort of, is an energy that's been around for a long time, you know, in our community and in Justin's community, and just sort of the reality, the truth behind music is that it's rarely a solitary genius in the bedroom making music. You know, it's almost always the product of a group of people or a community of people. And I've found over many years that music, making music, making art, trying to find a sustainable life and all of this that's not, you know, where you're not making big compromises, where you're not sort of signing your rights away or kind of getting involved with corporate interests. It's very helpful to have a community around you and to collaborate and to be generous with others and they're generous with you and to have alchemy with folks. And we've sort of found over many years of working and knowing each other, not just Justin and I, but a large community of people, that there's something missing in the music industry, which is kind of a place for open collaboration between musicians without the kind of pressure of branding it or for 3 years or taking a band photo or kind of going through the promotional bottleneck that you have to go through if you're kind of doing the conventional record release. And so that's how People came about. And People is essentially, it's a publishing platform. It's a sort of a, you know, for lack of a better word, it is a kind of streaming service, a home for everything from very raw improvised music that, you know, I could record. I could sit here with my guitar right now and put a microphone up and record while I'm talking to you and then put it up on People if I wanted to. Or, you know, everything from that all the way to like a very composed, developed record like Big Red Machine, which is kind of, you know, and everything in between. And I think we just wanted to try to create a new kind of frame for this kind of energy and also just co-working amongst. It's very easy to share credit and share revenue. It exists right now as a website where you can go listen to tons of music, and eventually it'll be an application. And it's not meant to replace anything, or it's not really even a reaction against anything. It's more just something we felt was missing. And, you know, how do you recreate the feeling of looking around a weird record store and finding stuff that you're interested in, not because some algorithm is telling you to listen to it, so, or a weird radio station for that matter.
You know, there's a quote somewhere where you, and maybe the press release, where you're saying, with this, as you're talking about right now, you see the process of making work and showing it all openly. And I thought, you know, a lot of artists, or maybe not, but it would seem like a lot of artists would run away with this because, in a sense, it might take away from the mystique, you know, that music has allowed, you know, through the ages. And I thought, also, it doesn't take away from that mystique at all. And I didn't know if that was on your mind at all for this.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think I came up, you know, like my first exposure to rock and roll and like any kind of mythical, legendary rock and roll stuff, you know, was the Grateful Dead. And Grateful Dead, when I got into the Grateful Dead, it was in the early 80s when I was like, you know, 8, 9 years old, 10 years old, and we were getting these like seventh generation bootlegs on cassette tape. And there was definitely like, you know, good quality bootlegs, and also for the performances that were really transcendent. And then I got into jazz, and I got into, you know, a lot of music that was more spontaneous, and where I kind of always liked to hear the mistakes and the kind of like people talking or, you know, weird stuff. And then I think with, like, as the National became a band and the way we kind of came up, it just was never part of our vocabulary. We would obsessively make these records and, you know, spend a lot of time in the studio and perfect them in some ways. But I think it was always there, like this feeling of, my brother and I always enjoyed playing improvised music, and Justin Vernon and his community, they definitely like come from a place of just, you know, deep, you know, versatile musicians that enjoy not always being so prepared or so, you know, like, I think, you know, when you travel around with a rock, we've been touring in the National for almost 20 years. And after a while, it does become kind of like Groundhog Day. Like, what city are we in? And here we are playing our songs again. And, you know, and it can be hard to change them when you're just exhausted and you're kind of like on the fly. So having an outlet for just this, everything in between, and to show more process, like, even, you know, I think some of this energy will even filter back into the band, you know. It's like, and it did already with, you know, Sleep Well Beast, because that was kind of, we did the Day of the Dead project, the crazy 6-hour, mm-hmm. you know, tribute to the Dead as part of this charity record, and because we had worked with Bob Weir, and, you know, we're all kind of like, not, maybe not Matt, but the rest of us really love that music, and that energy kind of did already filter back into the band. But I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with making a very polished record, and there is something important about that, like, it to achieve. But I also think there's a lot lost, you know, if you ask any artist, like, what's on your hard drive, or what are those tapes in the corner there, usually there's something really interesting there. And every project that I've ever done working with musicians, a lot of times it's the fragments that end up being the most important thing. The idea that they didn't think was special might actually be the thing that evolves into something really transcendent, you know. And so I think we're just trying to create more of a frame for that, and also to encourage people to work together and to be open, you know. And then there, and of course, this is already happening in a lot of communities naturally, but there isn't necessarily a home for it. And for sure, the streaming services are not built to show context in a three-dimensional way. So if you go on, you know, Apple or Spotify, you can't tell who's playing the drums, or maybe they're starting to roll out credits. But like, I don't, with database functionality, it's so easy to have all that metadata there. And I think it's a little bit lost as far as the, you know, the medium. Like I actually, as a listener, I use, that would be my favorite thing, was to read Bob Dylan's essay on the back of a vinyl or whatever while I'm listening. And I think it's so easy to do. So we've just created kind of a frame for that. And it's fun. Like, so this Big Red Machine project is really the first record that was made for this platform. And it kind of like was, it was just a lot of fun to embrace the kind of process. And it feels as exciting to me as any other record I've ever made, but it does feel different because it had this kind of different frame.
Yeah. And I'd like to hear about that too, because you said it before too. You said, this feels like something new. You know, as a listener, when I get it, of course, what I hear is a song from people that I love, and there's the song, you know?
Yeah.
But as you're talking about the process, like, how is this something new? What is it about Big Red Machine that inevitably does make it different from the way you would normally do an album?
You mean, you're right. There is, you know, on a very elemental level or a simple level, it's still, you know, musicians writing songs together, and there's still, you know, you hear alchemy, you know, the same alchemy in Big Red Machine as you might hear in something else or in The National or whatever. But I think the way we went about it, where we didn't have a plan to be a band, we didn't have a plan to release a record. We just and I are like sitting by a fire upstate in my, you know, my house, and because we're friends and talking to other friends. And then we, you know, we're talking about people, because it was a couple of months after the first Berlin residency that we did in 2016, which is kind of where this all came from. But we're just basically, I started playing some music I'd been working on, and he says, well, why don't we put up some microphones and mess around? And that was the beginning of Big Red Machine. But what happened was, we still didn't say, oh, let's call it Big Red Machine and make an album. But then we decided, well, why don't we just, we'll do this for fun when we're in the same place. So when we were at Eau Claire last summer, or in Haven in Copenhagen, and then in Cork, Ireland, that sounds from a safe harbor, each place we just got up and played an improvised concert where we were kind of performing these sketches in front of people, basically writing songs in front of people. And it was something that we had been experimenting with at Eau Claire and at, you know, at the People residency in Berlin and in other places, like kind of taking down that wall of like presentation, where it's like allowing people in on the kind of, you know, workshop in a sense. And so that's how we wrote these songs, was kind of through performance. And then after the fact, we did gather mostly at Long Pond, my studio in upstate New York, and some at April Base, and we worked on the songs a lot more. But then at some point, we sent them to 30 friends. You know, we just sent, we made rough mixes, and we sent notes with all the lyrics, and just sent them out. And like in every, so 30 friends, musicians of all kinds, sort of worked on them and sent us contributions, which we then sort of like edited and played with and processed and sculpted into the record. So it felt, I mean, it's not totally dissimilar from how maybe some other records are made, but this, from the beginning, it was never really about like, we're the band, you know, we're going to be the Big Red Machine. It was really always going to be this sort of communal effort. But at the core of it, there's still a strong idea and a strong, you know, sound and whatever. It has, it does have a thread. But it just, to me, it feels, it has this sort of wild communal energy that feels really, I don't know, just refreshing.
And it's such an interesting idea. And to see the way that the songs still come out, I mean, it could have been one of those too many cooks in the kitchen scenario, but I never get that feeling from any of the songs. And, you know, even the variations and styles, like I'll bring up Lila. I mean, it's got a bit of a hip hop feel to it. Like I can hear even specifically like a Kendrick sort of feel to, you know, what's going on with that one.
Yeah, I mean, that one is, it's actually based, there's a drum loop. Sometimes Brian Devendorf from The National sends me drum loops that he made in his basement on his iPhone, like when he's just hanging out. And it's in 7, so it's in sort of an odd meter. But and then I wrote the music to it. And and I, it just never, it just was sort of something I was excited about, and I played it with, for Justin. It was kind of the thing that most excited him, and at first, and then JT Bates, the drummer who plays on the record, he's this amazing jazz drummer who plays a lot of different stuff, but he, you know, he just like unloads on it, and it just was, it got really exciting from the beginning. But I think it goes to different places. So at first, yeah, it has this kind of like hip hop energy maybe, but then later it kind of becomes almost Baroque or something when it on its way out. And and Phoebe Bridgers, Brad Cook, who is was there and is plays a lot on the record and helped to sort of produce it, he was out in LA and like played it for Phoebe in the studio, and she improvised to Justin's improvised vocal in the bridge, you know. And so it had, but they sound almost, it sounds composed. And I don't think there's no, like, really, I never have the feeling about with this stuff as too many cooks in the kitchen. It just sounds like, it just, I don't know, it just speaks to the alchemy of people together. It's just really exciting to me in this way. And I think there was a lot that we didn't use also, but I think the stuff that we did use, it just feels fun. But these songs, we've been playing them live a little bit, and they can take different shape. They can also be very stripped back, you know, which is fun to play them. We sometimes we do it just the two of us also.
Is there a bit of I don't know, self-awareness, inside joking to the lyrics to Gratitude? Because when Justin comes on and says, you know, I better not fuck this up, we better not fuck this up. I don't know if that was in reference to what you were doing.
Yeah, I mean, I it's funny, I haven't actually asked him that question. That's a good point, though. Maybe that is, there is some, like, self-awareness. But I think it was also, he thinks a lot about sound, and, like, certain things just click in his brain, and he probably, it just, felt like it had always been there, you know. So it's something about it. It's really fun to do that one live. It kind of like blows the roof off.
Of course, you know, I do want to bring up that name, because Big Red Machine, I have to imagine, is in reference to Cincinnati and the Reds.
Yeah, it's like dubious Cincinnati Reds mythology, but really it's, you know, because Bryce and I, my brother and I, were born in 1976, which of course is the year that the right. Second year in a row that the Cincinnati Reds won the World Series, that they beat the Yankees that year. And we grew up, you know, we were at the game where Pete Rose broke Ty Cobb's hit record, and sort of our bedroom, we shared a room growing up until we went to college, and on the walls there was like Cincinnati Reds memorabilia, literally, of the Big Red Machine. So when I wrote, we were making Dark Was the Night in 2008, which is this other charity record for Red Hot that we made, and we invited Justin. I wrote him on MySpace, actually, and it was right after For Emma had, you could still do that at that time, was after For Emma had come out, and we were touring on Boxer, and in a way we were, you know, deeper into what we were doing in terms of just having been on tour for many years and et cetera. And he was very gracious and sent back the song Bracket Wisconsin like in 2 weeks or something, and we were just like, wow, like, I guess he's in a prolific mode, maybe we could like write a song or something. And so I recorded some music on the piano, and I, when you make a new Pro Tools file, you have to call it something. So I named them all kinds of things. And actually a lot of the Big Red Machine song titles are actually just my sketch titles, like Deep Green and Forest Green. And there's another one that we didn't finish called Infinite Green. And, but anyway, so the back then I just called it Big Red Machine, cause I was probably thinking about, you know, whatever, my childhood. And, then he wrote a song to it, and he interpreted the Big Red Machine as a heart. There's sort of this heart imagery in the lyrics of that song. And that was really the first, we had never met in person. It was like the first collaboration. So it felt like when we were going to do this, it just made sense that we call it Big Red Machine. And then the cover of the record is actually like a heart amulet, like an ancient sort of image of what they thought a heart looked like. It's all kind of, you know, but yeah. I do love the like, you know, the Big Red Machine Cincinnati Reds mythology, but it is funny that a lot of them turned out to be kind of bad guys. So it's kind of like take it with a grain of salt.
Is there any kind of baseball rivalry between you and Justin? Because I would guess he's probably like a Twins or a Brewers fan.
Yeah, I don't get, like, it's funny because he's a huge basketball fan and a football fan, but I don't get the feeling that he's a huge baseball fan, although his dad is like an arbitrator for baseball, actually, I think, for a while. But he's we haven't had that discussion. But I think he's like Ohio. It's funny because I say everyone from Wisconsin is just like a nicer version. Like, they're that much nicer the further west you go. So, but like, it is still the mid. We're all still Midwestern. So.
Well, we've got the farm league for the Reds too. So I'm connected at least in that way. You know, we've got the bats down here. So
it's true. It's true.
So what's the further plans for people? I mean, you've talked about, you know, having the concerts in the past. Are there going to be more of those? Is this going to keep going further?
Yeah. I mean, I think. We want it to grow far away from us, and to be very soon, it shouldn't feel like it's led by us. You know, I think it should feel like a true collective, and it should grow artist to artist into diverse corners far away from us. And it's already happened. I think there's like 800 contributors already.
Wow.
on people, and it's only been 2 months or something. So, and there's almost, close to 1,000 people a day are signing up to like listen, and you know, so it's definitely has a weird energy to it. And my hope is that it creates new kinds of music, you know, like new kinds of, and already I've had so many experiences, you know, that I wouldn't have had, not just Big Red Machine, like, you know, at the People Festival in Berlin last week, I would be playing very experimental music, sort of textural noise in one room, and then go into another room and get to play with a chamber orchestra, and then go into another room and I'm writing songs with singers I love. And, you know, and it's just, and all that stuff can live on this platform, and then it can also publish out. So the idea is not to be in opposition to anything like Spotify or Apple. It's actually kind of like in sort of concert with them, where we can publish to those platforms also and kind of enrich them with whatever is being made. And, you know, so I feel like it's a healthy development in music. And we've had a lot of support from wonderful people like Jay Jaguar, who's, you know, they're secretly Canadian, Jagger, or mm-hmm. just, they're the label that Justin's been on with Bon Iver, and they've just been really supportive and helping us figure this out. And you know, they put out the Big Red Machine record on physical, like, so you can buy it as vinyl, and help us get it out everywhere. And it's just a kind of a fun thing. So I hope it grows, but slowly, but also far away from us is the idea.
I mean, what you've done with your career, by the way, has been so much fun to watch, because, you know, a lot of people, they get their band, they do their thing, and that's it. And the way you sort of just find all of these things to branch out into, you know, whether it's, you know, Beyond the National, something like this, and people and film scores and the collaborations and everything to go there. I love watching what you do and hearing what you do.
Thank you so much. It's been very fun. I don't know, like, it's not like, don't really have any special plan about that. It's just kind of stuff happens. And I think, again, if you're sort of open and like playing music, as opposed, I don't know, like, we've never been the type to sort of sit on our hands and be in love with something we did before. It's sort of like, well, we did that. So, I mean, it's funny. I talked to Justin doesn't love to talk about music really, because he'd prefer just to make new music. And I understand that, you know, it's like, and I think that's how I feel a lot too, is just like, keep moving, because we're lucky to have the opportunity to do this and also help other people have outlets and have opportunities. So that's also why we try to, like, especially this People project, it's really about giving other people a outlet.
That might come up in sort of competition with something else, because your past is going to start being in those big round numbers. I mean, you mentioned earlier, you know, the National turning 20 years old. Well, that's next year, right? I mean, suddenly, that, you know, it's going to be a lot of this stuff where people are going to be asking you about those big round numbers. With that in mind, I mean, do you guys think you're going to be celebrating 20 years? Is that part of moving forward, looking back?
Yeah, I mean, we're not big fans. I mean, actually, we had a great time performing Boxer in its entirety, because that record actually really works like that. And then we were even joking, as we were like, well, maybe we should just do all the records like that when their birthday comes up. But I don't know. We already missed Alligator's birthday, I guess. But I think the band is actually really healthy. We're kind of working a lot also. Like, there's been a lot of music, a lot of new music being made with the band. And Matt is in a very, like, energetic place with stuff right now. And the shows have been really fun this year. So, I don't know. I think, I kind of think we all have little kids and stuff. So I think there's not we have to be careful how much we tour at this point. So I think we'd rather do really special things and less of it or something. Mm-hmm. But make a lot of music and just enjoy it while we can.
I mean, some of those bands, they've done that, you know, not done the tour, just did, I mean, remember doing the Pearl Jam 20, you know, it was just one show or one weekend, whatever it was. And
Yeah. I'll keep it in mind for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I know it's hard, as you said, to look back, especially if you're already being excited about new music. I'm always certainly excited about new music from you guys, so I will not ever complain about that. And I'll end with, you know, what else is on the books for you outside of that? Do you have any other big projects on the way that we can look forward to?
Yeah, I mean, there's the studio that we have in upstate New York, Long Pond, which is where I live. It's near Hudson, New York, and there's just so many great musicians coming through there and making records and stuff. So there's a bunch of stuff that's like being made and feels really exciting. But I won't mention anything specific, but there's just, you know, some of it's part of the People kind of collective, and some of it's just like records that'll come out. But just excited to have that space and be working. But yeah, it's just, we actually recently did we wrote the music and the songs for an adaptation of Cyrano de Bergerac for theater that's sort of being test run in Connecticut, but it seems like it's going to like go on and have a life. And that was pretty much of a trip, because I'd never really thought about that. It was an interesting challenge and really fun, actually. So we did, my brother, I, and Matt worked on that, and kind of excited to see what happens with it.
Oh man. Well, we'll always be listening and be waiting. And I appreciate it, Aaron, for taking the time to talk today and go over this. And you know, congratulations on this, man. People is really one of the coolest projects out there, and we're really loving Big Red Machine, too.
Amazing. Thanks so much for supporting it.
All right, man. We'll see you around whenever you get back down here.
Cool. For sure. Take care.
All right, bye. Hey, big thank you to Aaron Desner for that call right now. That Big Red Machine album, self-titled, it is out now. Don't forget to hit subscribe wherever you're listening from right now so you can keep up with these interviews. We do publish multiple ones every single week, whether it's YouTube or the podcast version, iTunes, Podchaser, wherever you're getting from. Subscribe there as well. And then give it a rating. Leave a review. That's a big help to us every single time. After that, you can head to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern. You'll also find some bonus episodes of this series over there. I'm Kyle Meredith. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.